This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge every Thursday from 8 until 9. I'm Tal Meritz, and this week I am joined by Joy. Hello, Joy. Welcome back.
Hi, Tal.
And of course, Kath.
Hello, Tal. Hi, Joy.
So, hi, Kath. We all said hello to everyone now.
Hello, Kath. Hello, Joy. Joy, hello, Kath. So, hello. Welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
It's good to be here. Very exciting.
Now, if people do want to come contact, say hi to Joy, say hi to Kath, of course say hi to me, most important of all, please send us some SMS on 0427JOY949. You can also email onair@joy.org.au, and you can always use that amazing Joy app to contact us. Now, Joy, you have actually already been interviewing someone.
Well, you know how we have a holy festival, a religious festival. I thought we should talk about Lent, because it is Lent, isn't it?
It's Lent.
Yeah, so I thought that was a fairly significant Christian festival. Okay. So I interviewed someone yesterday about it. So this was Simon Holt, who's the senior pastor from the Connell Street Baptist Church. And here is Simon and I talking about Lent. And good evening, and you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And we always talk about, well, Tao does and I do when I'm on, about a religious festival each week. And we're going to talk about a big festival in the Christian calendar, and that is Lent. And here to help us understand what it's all about is Simon Holt from Collins Street Baptist Church. Welcome, Simon.
It's lovely to be here, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Now, what is this thing called Lent that everyone is on about at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, Baptists traditionally have not been great celebrators of Lent.
They're not great Lentons.
I considered that all a bit too Catholic and liturgical. But we at Collins Street find great encouragement in those festivals of the year that are kind of across borders and time, and they help us kind of connect into the Christian story in very particular ways. So the festival of Lent helps us journey with Jesus from his baptism in the River Jordan all the way through his adult ministry to his crucifixion. And it's really a period of about 40 days plus some days, about six, seven weeks, that helps us kind of journey with Jesus and follow the story of Jesus as those who profess to be followers of Jesus.
Now, it started Wednesday a week ago with Ash Wednesday.
Yes, that's right.
What happens on Ash Wednesday?
Ash Wednesday. Well, really, it's a kind of a beginning of a period of relinquishment. Jesus went straight from his baptism in the River Jordan off to the wilderness to do a round or two with the devil out there for 40 days and 40 nights of, sort of no eating and drinking and all of those sorts of things. Lent or Ash Wednesday is really a way for us firstly to begin the journey with Jesus in the desert, and to, in a sense, find some ways to connect in with that relinquishment, that giving up. And acknowledging our frailty as human beings, that we are frail, fragile beings, that, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. That sense that our lives are fragile, and being able to name that in each other's presence and in God's presence, to say, I am a fragile, frail human being, and I need resources beyond myself to make it through.
I must admit that I found the Ash Wednesday service very moving at Collins Street Baptist. Mm. And it's not something that I have sort of been brought up with, this whole Lent tradition, though most MCC churches would actually follow Lent. I'm really interested in this whole idea of journeying with Jesus. Mm. And often we talk about people giving up something for Lent, don't we?
We do, yeah.
You know, I heard someone's given up wine, someone else chocolate, ice cream.
Someone goodness gave up me, Facebook.
Facebook. Oh, my gosh.
How do they
now,
do
that
it?
Is a true sacrifice, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I wonder how long they'll last.
Yeah, I don't know. Not long, I reckon.
Why do we do that?
I think, again, that kind of connecting with Jesus, that to be a follower of Jesus, to kind of follow this very difficult pathway to the cross, means that you've got to be able to let go of some stuff. And we all have things in our lives that, you know, we either wish we could let go of or we probably need to let go of. This sense of relinquishing something as symbolic of that need. So that's why some people give up chocolate or coffee or Facebook. As kind of not that chocolate, coffee and Facebook are particularly significant, but that it's that conscious decision to say, I will let something go in order to continue on the way. And again, for all of us, whether religious or not, there's something in that that I think can be very helpful, that sense of letting go in order to continue on.
I also am interested in hearing about people who take something up.
Yeah.
For Lent. I know we were talking to someone who decided they were going to do a good deed for someone out on the streets every day.
Yeah.
I think that's another way people can look at it, is what can I do?
That's right. They kind of that
helps others.
Kindness or, yeah.
Yeah.
So in a sense, I've heard of people taking up a voluntary position in a soup kitchen, or people who kind of take up the initiative to go and knock on the neighbour's door and, you know, offer them a plate of cookies, or people who take up giving away a certain amount of their income each week to those less fortunate. So it's not only relinquishing, but it's also saying that to be a follower, to be on the journey, is to embrace life in a deeper sense, at a deeper level. And sometimes that's quite countercultural. You know, it's not so much self-focused as it is living in a way that acknowledges the other, acknowledges the person across the way, who might indeed be in far greater need than we are.
Now, I need to make a declaration here, as I actually attend Collins Street Baptist. So
it's been wonderful to have you there, Joy.
I have the benefit of hearing some great sermons every week, and I was particularly interested on Sunday when you talk about journeying with Jesus, you know, during Lent. But we're not called to do it alone.
No, we're not. It's a community thing. It's we journey together. And in a sense, Joy, this is where I think the season of Lent can be helpful much more broadly, beyond those who come and sit in church on Sunday, beyond those who name themselves as a particular religious brand, you know, a Baptist or a Catholic, or but that sense that we are all journeying through life. And that we all face significant challenges. And what I find really, really inspiring about the story of Jesus is that Jesus, you know, it was a rough 3 years from his baptism to his crucifixion. There were good days, there were wonderful days, but there were also some really crap days. There were days when the religious establishment were out to get him. There were days when his own friends and family and followers couldn't get their head around what he was saying and kind of pushed back and pushed him away. There was that sense that there were periods of great loneliness for Jesus and feeling abandoned and left. And my sense is, whether we're religious or not, that's the experience for all of us. we've all been through experiences of rejection and loneliness and you know, the good days and the bad days that follow. It's a really up and down journey, isn't it? And I find in Jesus someone who kind of understands that, that no matter what life is like today, the story of Jesus reminds me that there is hope, there is meaning, there is companionship. And you are exactly right. It's not a journey we take alone. We don't do it, you know, that this sense that spirituality is just my own personal kind of cup of tea and I keep it all to myself. But the journey that we're on, we share with other people. We can't do it alone, can we?
I don't believe so. But I also hear from my community, the LGBT community, that so many people have been hurt by churches.
Yes.
And have walked away.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
Mm.
And I'm not sure how we get them to come back to acknowledge that this is what they need to be in community.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, apart from having churches like yours that are openly accepting, and I'm not talking just in words, but totally accepting of our community,
mm-hmm.
that people can go to.
Yes.
And be accepted for who they are.
Yes.
Not have to hide it.
Yeah. And sadly, Joy, that is a rare thing in the Baptist Church. It's a rare thing in many denominations and traditions. The church being a kind of a deeply conservative institution wanting to hold on to traditional understandings of relationships and family and are almost fearful of anything that sits outside of that kind of norm. And so they end up pushing away the very people who most need a sense of community and belonging and redemption and forgiveness. And I just think that is profoundly tragic. And so certainly we at Collins Street and many other churches as well have kind of shaken off that conservatism, shaken off that fear and that anger and said there's nothing to be fearful of here, that the church is an open table. There are no boundaries. There are no exclusions. It is an open table to which all are welcome. And you know, it's not even, Joy, that, you know, I'm keen that every person from that community find a church and find religion. But what I do think is profoundly important for all people, whatever their sexuality, is that they find a sense of belonging and they find a sense that others are on the journey with them, whether that includes mentioning the name of Jesus or not, but that they find a community in which they can share life and share the journey and its ups and its downs. And Lent, again, provides me a kind of a picture, a narrative, a way of understanding that story as one that we can participate in.
Yeah, I think I just want to say that if people are interested in dipping their toe back into the water,
yes.
and finding somewhere that they can be in community, mm. where they can follow Jesus with others.
Mm.
Tell us what's happening there at Collins Street Baptist.
Yeah, look, Collins Street Baptist Church is one of these old city churches, almost 175 years old. It's been there for a long time. It's kind of the kind of the original Baptist church of the nation, so it has a lot of history and a lot of tradition and story, and it's a beautiful old building with these grand white pillars. So it's a community with a great sense of history. But it's a living community. It's a community of pretty ordinary people like you and me, Joy, who have found in the story of Jesus something that they can connect with, something that does give a sense of meaning and purpose to their own lives. And we would always want Collins Street to be a place of open doors, to be a table at which everybody can sit. And that is so important to me. And whether it's someone of a different sexuality or whether it's someone of a different race or language or even religion, that this is a place which is safe, welcoming and honouring of your story, but inviting you into the story of Jesus and seeing if that story has any connection with your own. And so we gather every Sunday for our Sunday service at 10:30 in the morning, 174 Collins Street. And I would just want everyone to know that you are very, very welcome.
And you can even have coffee before church.
You can indeed.
And if you're wondering whether you want to come to church and you're feeling a little bit afraid of it, send us a message on Spirit Lounge, because I'd be happy to meet with you for coffee and we could go there together. Thank you very much, Simon.
It is my pleasure.
You're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Now, we were talking about Lent before. Now, obviously, I'm not Christian. So my understanding, of course, is that Lent is a bit of a day where, you know, a period where you restrict yourself in different ways.
Yes, you give up. A lot of people give up something. I know someone who's given up wine, someone else ice cream, someone else Facebook. I mean, really.
Oh, unbearable.
I know.
Couldn't be done.
But there's an important point to be made, that you give up something so that something else can be done. Meditation, consideration, contemplation. It's not necessarily about weight loss.
No. And in fact, Connell Street Baptist, where I go, we're actually following a series of meditations that we've been given to talk about, well, you know, where's the future of the church? What is it that we're called to do in the city, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, so you give up whatever you give up. I don't actually
for
give
a reason.
Anything up. I take things up.
So speaking of restricting yourself and giving
restraining
things up
yourself.
And restraining and such, we're actually going to be talking about 50 Shades of Grey for much of this show.
Just to balance things out.
Yes, a bit of Lent. Bit of 50 Shades, all of that
yes.
sort of thing. Maybe you'd start because, Joy, first it's worth that we're going to talk a little about some of the religious responses that have been going on. But maybe, Joy, you actually read a fair bit of 50 Shades of Grey. So.
I managed to get through 50 Shades of Grey and then halfway through the next one, which is 50 Shades Darker, before I had to give up. I want to say up front, it is so badly written, it's quite insulting to my intelligence to actually read the thing. I found it really frustrating because it just, yeah. And I understand some of the authors who write really well and can't get published are really peeved off because, you know, she writes this really badly written trilogy and it gets... makes lots of money for her. So the story is basically about Anastasia, who is a virgin, and she meets Christian, who is a
not
businessman,
a
very, very wealthy man. And she goes to do an interview with interview him for a student newspaper and falls for him, of course. But little does she know that he is not into relationships. He's actually into bondage and discipline. And he likes to be the dominant one in the relationship. And he has these submissives that have to sign a contract. But he's taken with her and he wants her to sign a contract. So we go through all this drama. The end of the story that where I've got to is she marries him.
I see. So there's a lot of, yeah, it's a lot of bondage and discipline, a lot of will they, won't they, in terms of it getting more intense or...
But yes. Having said that, she agrees to this. And in fact, she has this struggle between, I shouldn't be doing this because she doesn't tell anyone what she's doing, even her friends. But she also enjoys it. So there's this real struggle going on her between I shouldn't enjoy it, but I do.
And she doesn't sign the contract, which is really
no,
important.
No, she doesn't sign the contract. And he is willing to have what he calls vanilla sex to remain with her. He actually falls in love with her.
So there's been some interesting reactions to this whole debacle, and I guess a lot of them have focused. We've seen a lot from various sort of religious groups that are quite opposed to this book and opposed to then the movie that's just came out, right? That's sort of why it's returned to the public eye. Yeah, what have you sort of seen from some of the opposition to it?
Well, I guess it depends who. I wonder with what I've been reading, how many of them actually read the book or gone to see the movie before they actually write about it? I've only read one review of the movie by a youth worker in the UK who actually went to see it. He said, how can I review a movie that I've not actually seen? So he took himself off to see the movie, and he felt more embarrassed by standing in the queue with all these females than...
just on his own.
Yeah. And he just said that, I mean, the movie was just boring. There's not a lot of sex in it, like there is in the book. Didn't like. He said, you know, should Christians see it? Well, it's up to you.
I read some that were, of course, a bit like, I thought it was interesting on the basis that people religiously had opposed, were opposed with it. Because I guess there would be many that say, what do you mean if people are then doing these things in the comfort of their own home in a married couple, right? We're presuming people who feel that people need to be married. What's the big deal? Well, apparently there still is, right? That's not...
They label it as erotica and pornographic, and they say that that's wrong. I mean, I guess that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, I also saw that it's like, yeah, there were groups that were like, is it pornography? And they were like, yes, because it puts images in your head, right, even if it isn't physical. It creates mental images. I also saw opposition more on the basis of... I thought it was interesting trying to extend the idea that, well, it's not just the two of you. You're like bringing the ideas of this writer in, right? It's like you're bringing a third person into the bedroom with you. I was like, all right, that's a bit of an interpretation.
I can't help but feeling a little bit disappointed that love and marriage needed to be brought into it in some way to reconcile what it meant for these guys to be brought together. And it's a little bit like Harry Potter living at the end. I just think, well, he needed to die. And why did these guys need to get married to make it okay? If we're really going to have a discussion.
There are people in the middle of Harry Potter right now who are like,
sorry.
What?
Spoiler.
Oh, come on, guys. It's been years.
But there's something about in the midst of this issue about what it means to get involved relationally like this. Let's neaten it up, bring love into it. Therefore, they can get married and everything's therefore okay. But is it? And I think there's something very interesting that lies underneath this whole story about authority and power.
Good evening. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we've been talking about 50 Shades of Grey. Now, Kath, you were talking a little about how it sort of cleans it up a little in terms of having them get married and stuff like that.
Yeah, it seems to me that this book is laden with a moral question about what's right and what's wrong, what's good sex, what's bad sex. Is there such thing as sex that's not okay, or sex that somehow pushes the boundaries of what's appropriate? And rather than hang with that and really explore the difference between being an authorized person and having power over somebody and how that's played out in sexual relations, bringing the whole... The concept of falling in love, and therefore, because it's American, we get married and we become this heteronormative couple where everything is therefore, and I'm doing that thing with my fingers, okay, in the bedroom. It robs it for me of really grappling with a core question about, you know, what is sex and what does it mean to be in relations with somebody, and really dealing with issues of power and authority, right and wrong.
But I think it's worth noting that a lot of the people that oppose it really don't care about the sex outside of marriage part, right? A lot of the religious groups that oppose it are worried that their married community are going to start taking the things from this series into the bedroom, and that alone is that even a consensual married couple, oh no, they can't be, you know, spanking each other or whatever it is they're going to be
doing.
But
you see, without wanting to disagree with you, I'm going to disagree with you because it is about bringing something else into the bedroom, someone else, some other idea that doesn't fit into this thought that is marriage and that's somehow right about sex. So whether it's a practice and you made a joke about spanking, or whether it's something other than is approved of, it's about bringing, it's like bringing a third person or something else into a marriage, and therefore tainting something or making something into other than what is okay and what is deemed to be okay by those in authority.
But The thing that strikes me with that is I can't imagine that it's completely, I mean, you know, I'm, you know, couple, friends talk and that sort of thing. And, you know, maybe appropriate, inappropriate, but still people might know things. But it seems to me that the real issue is, oh, it's only bringing in a third person if it's particularly kinky, right? If it was just general advice from someone, you know, if it's just a bit of handy tips for the newlyweds.
Nice little pun there.
Then it would, it's not bringing someone in, but suddenly because it's something that, oh, we're not really wanting people to be too exciting, now it is. That's,
so
that's
what
where
is
I'm
kinky? I mean,
I'm sure that's an individual thing. I read someone who was writing about this, and I thought from a very sensible point of view, a Christian writer, and they said, well, maybe we need to stop looking at what actually happens in the books that we might agree with or disagree with, and maybe we need to look at as Christians, celebrating sex as being a natural thing and being a thing that we should enjoy and do more of and, you know, explore more, rather than just saying, no, no, you can't do any of this.
Well, I had some that sort of, from what I read, it was a bit of an attitude of saying, oh, well, look, you can do whatever, but is it for, the assumption was, oh, you can enjoy sex and you should, but it should be you're enjoying and you're connecting with your partner. And that this was sort of declared not connecting with your partner. It was for you when you do these sort of things instead of with your...
But surely there's a whole connection on a greater level of trust and... When you actually go and try some of these things, you know, you've got to really trust the person that they're not going to hurt you or go beyond what you want them to do.
Yeah, look, and obviously we're not going to do a step-by-step thing here, but it strikes me that it's... But for any of those sort of things to work, it would have to be built on incredible amounts of trust and communication, probably much more than many couples have... As they do currently. I would say that many couples, even if individually, I mean, clearly there's quite a few people who are going off and reading this, even though they are in married couples where they don't do that sort of thing.
100 million.
Yes, well, yes. You know, presumably with some, quite a lot of them, even if they want to do, they probably don't have the communication and trust to do it. And that's why you end up getting the interest here somewhere else. So it just, I just don't buy the idea of saying that, oh, that somehow if it's too kinky, that that's you're no longer, it's no longer, it's basically the implication here is like, I mean, these are for groups where they like have a problem with masturbation. So it's like having sex with your partner, that's pure and this, where anything kinky is basically masturbation with another person. And I think the line they've drawn is fairly arbitrary there.
There was also quite a lot said about the fact that he was, you know, dominant over her, but she actually holds a heck of a lot of power in this relationship because he falls in love with her and he is willing to give up all this kinky sex to be with her. But she's the one that says, no, I actually want this. But this is what you can do and this is what you can't. So she holds a lot of power here.
And it's so interesting that something that... is deemed to be a bit dodgy, aka kinky, will be given up in order that there might be love. Is it possible that there can be love with kinky sex?
Well, that's what I mean, I stopped reading halfway through the second book, but that's what they were getting to, that they were, getting married and they were still having their kinky sex, and it was instigated by her.
Look... At some point, I just, some of the people who have a problem on that sort of level with like, oh, but it shouldn't, it's like, look, this is what people want to, I don't understand, I actually really don't understand at some point why, I see none of this as all that different from the opposition to homosexuality. At some point, I'm like, why do we have so many religious groups that are so obsessed with what people do in their bedrooms consensually between, with them and their partner or multiple partners?
Because desire is political and politics is about control. And so what happens when what is seen to be containable and controllable is then taken to a new place by, shock horror, a woman?
Yeah.
There are so many issues in that sentence that we could spend the next 5 weeks unpacking. And here is a woman who has unofficially consented to be dominated actually holds the power and pushes the boundaries, even though love and marriage is introduced by somebody who's willing to give up that which he has deemed to be necessary for him, you know, in order to serve the needs of the woman. So it's about inversion and desire and lack. And at the end of the day, it's really political.
I read a great thing Guy talked about, and I'm sure if we spoke in real life, this would be the only thing we agreed upon, to say the least. But I really liked what he said. He said, you know, he was someone who, on religious grounds, was against these sort of movies and stuff like that. And told a story about how, you know, in the past he's from one of those backgrounds where you protest these sort of movies when they come out and etc. He said, these days I can't even remember what I protested, right? But what I do remember is that not one person became a Christian or didn't enter the movie theater as a result of our protest.
No, you know, in fact, like, it gets more people in.
Yeah, and that I really liked what he had to say of, like, you know, if we're going to be having, if we have some, if the reason we're so vocal is because of some sort of moral outrage, there's higher priorities. And he sort of concluded by saying, you know, you're worried about the roles of people in that. Give money to a women's shelter. It takes less time and it's more helpful than the sort of protesting.
Yeah. Or heaven forbid you have a conversation with someone about why they enjoy reading the book.
Oh, yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's just higher priorities in terms of, it's ineffective.
And you could have a conversation with your partner about what sort of sex you want to try. I just think that as Christians we do not talk enough about sex and what a wonderful gift it is. And I think it's quite sad, really.
Well, it seems to often come from places where not only do they not talk about, they don't talk about sex in general, right? In terms of the communities that often have a problem with these sort of things, they as a whole just don't talk about sex. They only talk about not sex. They talk about that a lot.
What you can't do.
They talk about what you can't do, but then not what you can. And then I'm not then surprised that you have people who are interested.
I read an article that said what God says about 50 Shades of Grey. And I don't know, you know, I couldn't work out by reading the article how they knew what God was actually saying, except that they referred to Pope Francis a lot. So I'm not sure if they got a bit confused whether the Pope was God or not.
Right.
Not sure what. But basically their problem was that if people who are not married read the book, they might masturbate.
Oh, God.
You know, that was shock horror. That was their main argument against reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Which makes me touch on another thing. I did see quite a few opinions of people who, considering the religious role they have, are supposed to be at least celibate. And that's one where it immediately strikes me. It's like, look, if you're celibate, I do not care about your opinion on any of these things whatsoever. Like, that blows my mind that we have people in that who part of their job is to be celibate, also part of their job is to talk to other people about their sex lives. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, for me, a big question, which I think people that have been with their partners for a year or two or more may grapple with, is how you stay engaged, how you stay loving and connected, how you stay wanting to desire your partner and wanting to pursue them sexually when you're knackered and you're worried about the bills and you're worried about who's going to feed the cat and look after the kids. I mean, that's at the essence of what it means to engage with desire and choose to continue to love your partner.
And I think that's something that's so often sort of ignored with some of these people that I see, and others that recognize it completely, that say, look, if ultimately your aim and desire is to be connecting with your partner, all of this is very easily part of that. And there probably are exceptions to that. There's probably places where all of that can go wrong, where people can get pressured into things. But absolutely, there is definitely a way. It seems actually to me that this is commonly something that comes up because people are looking to spice up their sort of relationship that's been going on for a while.
It's hard work being a lover, really, isn't it? A lover for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. So
yeah, the bunny rabbit phase, you know, sort of wears off, and I haven't got it up to that stage in Fifty Shades or whatever that where it's worn off yet. and believe me, I won't get there because I'm not going to read any more of it. But yeah, I think it is hard work, and I've read people that talk about that in a very sensible way. You know, about maybe we should be looking at ways we can, you know, help people spice up their sex life. I'm not sure what exactly they're going to do.
Well, they're not helping personally, presumably.
No, but at least being open and talking about these things helps people.
I think it does. It's much easier being a mother than a lover.
I think there's
you know,
a lot
of... We need to continue to engage with people and encourage desire. And I think the conversations and the inquiry, you touched on it before, rather than judge someone, what is it about this book that's really captured you? Why do you enjoy reading three of them? I mean, 100 million reads is a lot. I'm less interested in the quality of the writing and more interested that so many people feel compelled to read it.
I can understand why so many religious communities have a problem with the sort of bad things that can happen in terms of sex and sexuality, but I would always say that I think most of those problems come from the lack of communication, much, much more than too much of it.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
We sort of have a bit of a... We're not entirely in agreement, I guess it's fair to say. And I guess that comes to the...
No, we're right and you're wrong. I mean, just accept it.
Right. Well,
we agree.
Exactly. It's 2-1.
Well, I'll put it like this. I mean, while I think as a whole the idea of talking about things like BDSM and people engage, whatever it is that people want to do, I think that's fine. I think that's wonderful. I think the book in particular, though, does have somewhat an unhealthy approach to the idea of that he has this background that, you know, he was sort of basically abused as a child, and then he does this, now he does this stuff, and that this acts as sort of the healing for that. And I don't know if it's the right way to go about in that instance, basically.
But the healing comes through him actually being willing to give up what he wants for someone else. The fact that she loves him, and one of the things that happens is this guy can't stand being touched because of what's done to him in his childhood. But he's willing to let her, ever so gently and so gradually, reach out and do that. And while I think it's all a bit weird and a bit over the top the way it's written, it's interesting because, you know, let's face it, sex can be really healing. Allowing yourself to become that vulnerable with someone for people is quite an amazing thing.
So I resonate with your size. And I also hear what Joy's saying, and I think probably as we draw this segment to a conclusion, maybe it will be wise for us to encourage people to be careful with one another and careful with themselves as we're having these discussions about vulnerability, about desire, about sex, and touching on pain, touching on things that, you know, abuse and things that have been done to us that are not based on love and not based on permission. So I think erring on this whole controversy is very tender. So we need to be a little bit careful while being robust in our desire to want to explore it.
I think it comes down to a lot to trust and communication. You know, for whatever people want to explore sexually, you really need to trust the person you're with, and you really need to communicate. You know, I'm not going to sit here, neither are you going to sit here and say, this is what you can do and can't do.
But I think my issue here is that some of this stuff touches on this idea that, you know, if they're, I mean, people can be seriously traumatized or whatever it is about things. And I feel like an element of what goes on, the implication here is that this sort of stuff is really helpful. And it's like, look, if that's seriously going on, you can't be touched by someone, it just, you can't deal with that human kind, you need like serious help. Like, I mean, you really need to talk to a professional.
He is.
And okay.
So it's all going, right. He does actually.
All right.
He has actually having seen a psych.
But it is going full, yeah. It is going full circle to the point I made earlier on about it all being a bit neat, love and marriage and everything okay.
I'd love to know how it ends, because I haven't actually read.
I'll read the rest of
the
it.
End.
Joy.
No. I might have to just read the last chapter to see how it ends.
Oh, but then you don't get the context. Then you don't get the context, Joy.
Okay, you can read the second
half.
I'll read it to you.
I'll call you and I'll read it to you.
No, I think that's quite all right. Thank you. I don't want that to happen.
I think I wanted to worth noting that one of the biggest sort of takeaways I got, because, again, we were also talking at some point a little bit during the break about, like, you know, and Kath, you were touching on, you know, what even is kinky and what isn't. And I thought it was so funny because I remember studying, and, you know, I won't be definitively like, here's what Judaism says. But if we start changing religions, or we start even just changing sects with religions, you very quickly see how arbitrary what is considered risque and what isn't just completely changes. So the example I would use is that if you
you're
really
going to go there, aren't you?
If you want to look in the Talmud in Judaism, lingerie would be not okay. But there are a whole lot of things. You know, you can have sex like this and in this position and in that position.
Just not with lingerie
even,
on.
Even oral and anal is for many people okay. Even sex outside marriage in certain contexts is fine according to the letter of the law, but not lingerie.
Don't wear lace.
Yeah, no lace. Like,
wow.
It's all fine as long as you're totally naked. Like as I just want to use that as an example of it, just like how sometimes you have certain reasonings that you feel like, oh, it's so obvious what is and isn't like okay and unhealthy and blah, and it just very quickly changes when you change which religion we're talking about.
So we've managed to talk for an hour and come to very few conclusions and end up quite confused. But we're dealing with
usual
communication. The key is to talk,
trust,
and talk,
communication,
listen, inquire.
And you're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Someone did write in to us just saying, guys, just go see what the ancient Greeks did concerning some of the kinkiness that happened. And I thought I'd quickly note that there are quite a few scholars that actually think that some of the prohibitions in the Bible are actually in direct response to the surrounding empires, including the Greeks. So,
and what they were up to.
Yes, that's right.
And those Romans.
Yeah, all those Romans. So, we have come to the end of another show.
Oh, it's a bit sad, isn't it?
Oh, I know. You're back again, and then suddenly you're gone.
But we'll be back again next month, won't we?
Yes, and I'll be back, of course, next week.
Yes. It's good night from Joy.
Good night from Tull.
And good night from Kath.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.